From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. And this week's edition at Naps Chat, we are hosting our resident officers, our president of Brian Wagner, our executive vice president, Ivan Butts, and our secretary treasurer, Chuck Mulladore. What happened last week was that the United States Postal Service released its five-year strategic plan, that is fiscal year 2020 to 2024 inclusive. And it projects itself to be in a transformative stage. This report is required under current law, Section 2802 of Title 39 of the United States Code. And the Postal Service started presenting such a plan back in 1997 and has done so periodically from that point on. Gentlemen, you've had the chance to review this report. Is there anything that strikes you as surprising or sort of takeaways from it? Let me start with you, Brian.
Well, Bob, thanks again for having the resident officers on Naps Chat. One of my takeaways, I thought there was going to be a 10-year plan, but it's a five-year plan. And to 2024, it's a vision. Hopefully the post office has cleaned off their glasses on this vision. But I think one of the takeaways and that I saw was the modification of the NPA, National Performance Assessment Program, and the use of the pay-for-performance. You know, as you know, we've talked about we're still in a lawsuit with the post office over our current pay-for-performance system from FY 16 to 19, and now we're looking for 20 to 24. We're still trying to fix the problems we've had in the past. So that's one of the takeaways, how the post office anticipates or projects how they're going to work with NAPS in order to make a fair and equitable pay-for-performance system or pay package for EAS.
You know what's sort of ironic in that? Because I'm not used to looking at these MPA metrics. It's sort of out of my portfolio of legislation, regulation. But the one item for which there doesn't seem to be a metric for PFP is on engagement, which is kind of ironic. The engagement survey response rate is not something that is part of the metric. What do you take from that?
We're told that when employees are engaged, they're more productive, they come to work, that they're sickly, their attendance is better, and they perform better. Well, the post office has these challenges, but the employee engagement survey from the post office is, I'll just say, it's been in the toilet. So It's, you know, if it was tied to pay for performance, our members wouldn't be getting a pay raise easier because of that.
What about making it headquarters pay for performance? For the upper management, they're tasked with engaging the workforce. If they're not able to engage the workforce, including postal supervisors and postmasters and mid-level managers, why should they get any bonuses or anything along those lines?
For me, it's obvious that if you look at the response rates, if you make that a part of a senior executive's pay-for-performance increase, that they would see and feel financially what we feel financially with trying to achieve goals that are unattainable. And then but making it attributable to PFP or to employee engagement, maybe we would see some real engagement improvements within the Postal Service if that was part of their MPA.
And real quick, when NAPS was doing the consultation on the FY18 NPA, the team that when NAPS was part of it, and Dan Mooney from our North Central Area VP and I were at the Bulger kind of giving input, the executives wanted to make the Pulse, the engagement scores, part of our pay. And we said, whoa, wait a minute. Don't put that on as an indicator because you've got problems. Really, it should be coming from top down on the engagement. But they're trying to make it from bottom up that the supervisors and the managers, the front line, have to engage everyone, but they don't get engaged from the top. And it doesn't work that way. And again, when Chuck's article and the OIG report on the white papers about the supervisors, or what, the EAS, about 3% of the work hours, and they're managing, what, 70-some percent of the work hours in an operation. So they have a big stake in how successful the Postal Service is. They're trying to engage the employees on the front line, But that engagement isn't coming from the top.
Yeah, interestingly, Chuck's mantra on the many times that he's appeared on here in the past has always been, let us do our job and get out of the way so we can deliver quality services to the American public and do our job. In this report, it doesn't seem to really address that issue, and it seems to be transforming the Postal Service without that engagement of the mid-level managers and the frontline managers in pursuing that transformation of the Postal Service.
Bob, yeah, I agree. And again, thanks for having me back on NapChat with my fellow resident officers here. Always great to be with them on here, and you. Engagement. Well, here, nothing to me says thank you like a pay raise. Okay, so you want to engage people, let them have a consistent, good pay increase every year that reflects the contributions they make to the success of the Postal Service every day, every week, throughout the year. So if you really want to engage people, let's start right there. We'll start with pay. And because it hasn't been a goal of the Postal Service to pay people consistently and fairly, when pay is tied to this pay-for-performance system that I always say provides neither pay nor performance, then you're not going to engage people because people come to work for their families, to do what's right for their families, to do better, to raise their kids, to buy a home, send their kids to college. That's why people come to work every day. And when their work is devalued because they can't get a decent pay raise every year, that's the number one contributor to, I think, poor engagement. Secondly, just the overall attitude of some of the senior level managers in the Postal Service in terms of treatment of our members contributes a great deal to that as well. So, you know, they can have surveys and response rates and everything, and I'm not saying that I'm against them measuring those things. However, if you want to change the engagement culture, first start valuing people and start paying them according to their contributions to the overall health of the system. You can't come out of fall mailing season and then roll into peak season and people working enormous amounts of hours to get the mail moved, the packages delivered, all kinds of different weather conditions and a variety of issues. And then as they wrap all that up, they don't get a thank you. They get a pay-for-performance system that puts them somewhere in box three or four, which if they're lucky, might be a 2% pay raise. It doesn't square with this idea of engaging the EAS workforce.
This document, the 5-year strategic plan, calls upon its employees, supposedly an engaged workforce, to help transform the institution. And two of the areas of transformation that it will rely on frontline and mid-level managers is growing its digital footprint, the digital connectivity of its physical mail to in the digital universe. We talk about our kids and grandkids not as being wedded to physical mail, but more adept at using the internet and digital modalities of communication. So that wedding of a postal service providing both digital and physical footprint relies on an engaged workforce that is going to move forward and transform the institution. What possible incentive is there right now for our management team? When I say management team, I'm talking about people in the field to bring forth this transformation. If not, I mean, how do you do that?
Well, I mean, for me, Bob, I guess the only way I really see that kind of digital transformation and us supporting it is what we're seeing in form delivery that's rolled out by the Postal Service, where they're going to looking to expand that with links and whatever. When you get your form delivery, it include links that you can go to the various some of the advertisements that will be a part of that. So again, I think we support that as a management team as a point of contact for our customers, but I don't know where that fits into the sustainability of the Postal Service moving forward in this five-year plan. So there's a challenge for all of us to help grow that digital footprint by supporting those type of efforts. But at the end of the day, I think when we look at those efforts, we have to also look at what is going to help in the sustainability of the Postal Service.
Well, when you're trying to look at the digital side, you know, we have informed delivery and where your package is, where's my package? And that's great for the information, that mail moment electronically, and trying to build on, like I said, this to enlarge the digital footprints. But we're seeing even here in the Alexandria and the D.C. area, all the growth in residentials. You still have those deliveries out on the street that you're not getting rid of, and the mail volume has to be able to move up with that. And if the mail volume's dropping, you can have the digital, but is that going to offset what the cost that you're going to that you're going to have to deliver? Because we're not going to not stop delivering unless you get into what's the universal service of, you know, the obligation to deliver the mail. How often? Absolutely. So
even
again,
in this plan, not to cut you off, Brian, but even in this plan, they acknowledge a 6.1 million growth in delivery points per year. So Brian's absolutely right. You know, we have to consider that too.
Yeah, there's an increase in delivery points, but the decrease in mail volume, and there's an asymmetry to it that we have to, as an institution, deal with.
And again, we get the fact that on the package, the market share of the packages, right? We post office got, well, we weren't in it years ago when I was carrying mail. You know, we left it up to the competitors. Now we're in that game. Now you have the digital footprint that we're trying to make, and that's great too. But our core business is delivering to every house every day, every piece every day, and that hasn't changed in the 245 years that I'm reading in this report. That's what our core business is. I agree, let's move other revenue, but we got to still grow the mail. We still got to be out there with the customers because they're the ones who see us as the ambassadors to the community, and that's why the Postal Service is rated as high it is by the American public.
Right. Now, that's a great pivot point because LTS is coming up, and there were three items in this document where they're looking for substantive, either legislative or regulatory change. Three issues, actually, that's something that we're going to be focusing on. One is whether or not the CPI, the way in which we have the price caps as currently implemented, is fair to the Postal Service. That's number one. Number two is, what is the universal service obligation? The Postal Service in this document interprets the universal service obligation as currently configured as a restraint on its ability to survive, not an advantage. And the third issue that they are seeking is looking for ways to change the benefit package for which postal employees to which they're entitled, FEHBP and retirement. Ivan, those are issues that are very concerning to our members, and we're looking very closely to what extent Congress or this administration sort of embraces changes to USO, to the pay package, to price caps.
You're absolutely right, Bob. And we've already seen from the task force when they came out, that's one of the things they said they need to define.
That's the president's task force on the Postal Service, whose conclusions were released back in December 2018, just for our listeners.
That is correct. So even in that, they had to say, you know, we need to define what the universal service obligation is and who really needs it. And so, you know, that's kind of the buzzword of, you know, of reduced service or privatization or contracting out. It's all those, it rolls up all those possibilities when we have that kind of terminology of determining who gets mail, who should get mail every day, who should get mail 5 days a week or whatever, however many days a week. Again, I think we're congressionally enacted to deliver mail to Post Roads 6 days a week. That's who we are and that's what we do. Now, you know, as far as the other legislation we're looking for, I mean, you know, we have nothing on postal reform right now. But we do have great legislation out there that, you know, we should be behind 100%. I'm somewhat disappointed that we're not seeing the agency come out strongly with H.R. 2382. That's the repeal of the retiree pre-funding that we worked hard to get on the consent calendar. And I appreciate all the work you guys did when we initiated that campaign to get us the 290 votes so Representative DeFazio could get that bill on the consent calendar. We still wait to see how that will outcome, but we all should be on that. Maybe that's not the perfect bill for postal reform, but it's a step in the right direction to move us forward. So, you know, legislatively, when we come up to LTS March 8th to March 11th, we will be going, taking that issue to the Hill to thank all the representatives who got on board and then push for them to continue to bring this across the finish line through this consent calendar process. So as well as any other legislation that we're going to talk about it probably on a later episode. But again, let me emphasize LTS. LTS registration is open. Again, March 8th to March 11th registration is 225 currently. After February 13th, 14th, registration will go up to $300. Hotel room block closes February 13th. So, you know, let's make sure we have a great showing. We need a great showing out at LTS in 2020. We have a lot of work to do to get up on the Hill, some issues that we need to consider trying to hopefully take some legislation up to the Hill to change Title 39 and fix those issues. So, again, let's have a big push for our 2020 LTS, and I look forward to seeing you guys there.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to something you started with, Ivan, and that is reminding our listeners about the president's task force that made certain recommendations that were not necessarily compatible with universal service as we know it. Interestingly, this document, this five-year strategic plan, makes no reference of the president's task force recommendations explicitly. Very silent on that. I find that interesting. I'm curious if you guys have any reaction to that silence.
Well, not really sure when they say silence is consent, but I'm not really sure. All I know is that we were at the Eastern Region Cabinet meeting, and it was an excellent event in Evansville, Indiana. And one of the questions was about privatization. What would happen? And Ivan brought up a good point about mail delivery, and so did you, Bob. You go into privatization, is a company going to, if that goes privatized, the post office, they're going to pick and choose what day of delivery different sections of the country will get mail by a private company. Where today, again, we mentioned every piece every day. Privatizing the post office isn't the way to go. Now, with the fact on this whole report, I kind of like to circle back a little bit about the NPA and PFP that we have recently talked about. You know, the post office wants to make changes or propose changes, and they say the pay-for-performance system or NPA system does the following. Increases the objectivity of the USPS's pay-for-performance program. Well, sometimes it's not very objective because it's very subjective on a lot of the issues and the goals. Provides employees with access to their current performance data. We know it's months before our members even see the type of data on their scorecards, so that needs to be fixed. And this is what they say is currently happening. And it empowers employees to take more active role in tracking, improvement, and evaluation of their own unit performance. I'll tell you what, a lot of our members can't make a decision without calling somebody up at the district office just to be able to call in some overtime or even have to make a decision whether or not they're going to delay mail or continue with mail. If you're going to empower employees, empower them. That's going to increase your employee engagement. But the post office talks about employee empowerment. Need to see that happen more.
You know, a couple of years ago, there was a big move in corporate America and certain progressive state and local governments to delayering the structure of its entities. And what they did was you had your upper-level management, you had the mid-management, frontline managers, then you had your employees. In the Postal Service, you have multiple layers, multiple levers, so you have to. Managers can't make, are not empowered to make decisions on their own to best serve their customers. That is interference between the upper levels and the frontline managers. Yet there's nothing really in this document to address a lot of the issues that have been brought years ago by forward-thinking entities throughout our country.
Okay, which takes us back to that, let us do our job.
There we go.
We know what to do. We know how to do it. All right. So if you want your EAS frontline supervisors, your managers, your postmasters to really get the mail moving efficiently, let us do that because we know how to do it. So we don't need all these other factors in the way that stop us from doing that, from being creative and being micromanaged, correct? So that's one thing. Just get out of our way. Let us do what we were promoted to do and what we know how to do and we've been doing for a long time. And secondly, we have to understand, and I hope everyone understands, that that's a NAPS member. We don't want to see the post office fail. We want to see the post office succeed. But quite honestly, the last 10 years have seen leadership at the Postal Service highest levels that have not taken us into anything other than a more downward spiral. And much of that has been because of, okay, we understand the legislative constraints, PAEA. We understand all the requirements and the stresses that were put on the Postal Service because of that. But the micromanagement, that doesn't have to be there. The pay system, that doesn't have to be there. All of these other, the behaviors of senior leadership, treatment of people, this doesn't have to be there. So while we understand the congressional mandates have to be done at that level, there's a lot of things that are within the control of the senior leadership of this organization that they've chosen to either take the hard line on or take no line on. And consequently, you've stifled creativity at the local level. And to me, that's where you should have your creativity at the local level, driving the performance, everybody on the same page, get the mail delivered efficiently and properly. And managing the growth. And then a lot of these other things will take care of themselves. I used to always tell people, if we do all the little things right, the big things will take care of themselves. But we seem to have an opposite approach at the Postal Service where it's top down. We'll take everything up here and we'll let the local levels take care of it. It doesn't work that way. We have to be free at the local level, the level down there where the rubber meets the road, where the management and the craft employees work together to get the mail moved and delivered efficiently every day. And we can do that if they just let us do it.
Interestingly, in the document, they are making reference to these electronic devices to enable informed mobility and informed facility in some way to collect this data. The question is, what do you do with the data other than send more reports that are going to be filtering down from the region, from the district, back down to the field to result in more telecons that'll interfere with your ability to perform the service. I mean, I find that sort of counterintuitive to what they actually want to do.
Bob, it sounds like you were just working in the post office this morning because that's exactly what happens. Because oftentimes the data is used in many ways for negative means, right? So area vice president or someone in the area mops shop or whatever sends a report out that, hey, you failed on these pieces, and it cascades downhill like a snowball. So by the time it gets to the delivery unit, the snowball is a huge thing. It smacks into some people, and then everybody wants accountability, which in the language of the Postal Service oftentimes means discipline, as if we continue to discipline people for failures, they'll somehow get better, rather than teaching them how to make the process more improved so we eliminate the failures.
One of the issues that we touched upon just for a moment a couple of minutes ago was how this document sort of interacts with legislation. And one of the proposals or the musings of the authors of this document, and that it's the Postmaster General signed it along with the chairman of the board, Mr. Duncan, and that was creating a new system by which employees would receive certain benefits, health and retirement. The last time we saw that was when former Postmaster General Pat Donahoe tried to create a postal-only health system outside of the federal employees' health benefits to eliminate a pension system for postal employees, a fair pension system that we have right now. So, Ivan, at our LTS, which will come in the wake of the president's budget submission to Congress, no doubt, we're going to keep an eye on that, correct? And we're going to be in front of the ball when we're talking about those issues.
Well, as I tell members when I go around the country, we all need to stay vigilant over what's being put out by the administration and what proposed budget cuts are being made. We all need to stay vigilant on that. And yes, we will be doing that as we lead up into to LTS. So, but one another thing I looking at this plan and just making a real realization here. You know, the PMG was called before Congress to on this very issue, and Representative Meadows really was very adamant to the PMG on her failure to supply the 10-year plan, the then 10-year plan, as she had promised Congress, I guess, some months prior to that. So understanding that this document is a fulfillment of that legislatively, what I also realize is that during that period of time where this document has not been produced by the agency to Congress, we now see that our support from that other side of the aisle for postal reform has now dissipated. So, you know, although we have put out this 5-year strategy for the Postal Service, and it has in its envisioning some things without really fully fleshing them out. Mm-hmm. But also it also brings the burden that we're at the end of the day, we really need to get some postal reform, and we may have lost some footing in getting that done. That's, again, makes 2382, H.R. 2382, very important, because it's bipartisan legislation that's already it's set to go. You know, so we have to take what little steps we can take. It's almost like you got to crawl before you can stand, stand before you can walk, walk before you can run.
Right. You know, the transition to a new postmaster general, the absence of the 10-year plan that was promised to Congress last year, the four missing presidentially nominated members to the Board of Governors, or five, all contribute to the loss of momentum that you've referred to, Ivan. And some of that transformative juice that we need is sort of not being sort of squeezed out of the Postal Service right now because of the slowness, of the inattention to the requests made by Congress, the promises made, to a transitionary period. I mean, NAPS members are ready, willing, and able to save this institution and to fight for this institution. But we need the ammunition to do so. Any parting words from our resident officers?
Well, Bob, I really, again, thank you for inviting the resident officers in to speak on NAPS Chat. And I really encourage all of our members to actually read the Postal Service 5-year strategic plan. It's approximately 40 pages, 44. Read through it, not just once, not just twice, but take time to read through what the post office is putting out. Now, this was a required document that they had to fill within the law. They needed to provide this document. So just providing a document to meet a law, a requirement, a check, check the box is one thing. Needing to make sure that what's in the document can actually, what they vision or envision, will happen in the next 5 years. And again, NAPS is here not to be part of the problem, but part of the solution, and to be here for the post office, to be a partner, say, hey, look, what do you want from us? We're here to give ideas and give suggestions. And we're here to be part of what I'll call, say, the leadership team, but don't keep us on the bench. Get us in the game so we can help participate and be an added valued contributor to this organization.
Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today on NAPS Chat.
And register for LTS.
Yes, LTS registration. It'll be an extremely, extremely productive and educational event, and hopefully enjoyable. With that, have a great weekend.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make